and welcome to the Road to Genome podcast. This episode is being brought to you from Genomics England's headquarters in central London. I'm your host, Helen Bethel, genetic counsellor and podcast host for Northeastern Yorkshire Genomic Medicine Service. I'm delighted to be joined by Dr. Richard Scott, Chief Executive Officer at Genomics England. Lovely to meet you, Richard.
Great to meet you. Thanks for having me.
Can I start by asking you, what is your current job title and what does it mean?
So I'm the Chief Executive of Genomics England. So that means I run Genomics England, which is a UK government-owned company that works with the NHS and with researchers across academia and industry and participants in our programmes to help bring genomics into the fabric of everyday healthcare and make a difference to people's lives.
Fantastic. And was this what you envisaged you would do as a child, or did you have other aspirations?
I 15 years ago when I was starting in, or 20 years ago when I was starting in genomics, I would never have predicted quite where I would have ended up. And I guess that's probably often the case with careers. I'm a doctor by background, and I knew from probably when I was a teenager that I wasn't that good at the arts at school. So I was like a sciencey person. Yeah. And I remember deciding that I wanted to train to be a doctor. And I really liked the mix there of making a real difference to people's lives and spending time with people and really understanding them. Yeah. And that, and then the science mixed with that really excited me. I did also have a real thing for genetics, weirdly, as a child. And so though I didn't predict that as even my medical specialty until quite late, genetics was always something that I was fascinated in.
Yeah. So can you remember then the first time you heard the word genetics or genomics? You mentioned it interested you as a child. Can you remember that moment of when that spark started?
I'm not sure I can. So my parents are both plant scientists by background. And so that neither of them related to genetics specifically. My mum became a science teacher later. But I was very interested in biological science. Mm-hmm. And then actually as a young teenager, my dad used to read me books about genetics. So I remember he read me Richard Dawkins' The Selfish Gene.
Okay.
As when I was probably 11 or 12 or something like that.
Yeah.
And so I definitely, and it probably wasn't a new concept to me then, but I definitely remember that. And we used to talk about genetics, and I also was fascinated about it from that perspective from early on. And actually through my medical training, genetics is part of medical training. I trained in the 90s.
Yeah.
So it was a very different area then, and much less part of everyday healthcare, but it was there. And then I chose in medicine, you can do an extra sort of science-y year in the middle before you go and do clinical training. And I chose to do genetics as part of that year.
Okay.
So again, I was really drawn to it without knowing that I'd end up there in terms of medicine. I just knew it was part of what fascinated me about biological science, healthcare, and so on.
Yeah.
And it was, as I actually then trained as a paediatrician initially. And I remember one day I was on the wards at the Royal London Hospital on a ward round, and one of my colleagues and friends just said to me, "Oh, you should do clinical genetics. That's what specialty you should do," because we were probably trying to work out what we were going to do down the line.
Yeah.
And I, from the moment she said it, I knew she was right. I don't think I'd realised it was a specialty until that moment, which is a bit weird and obtuse of me, because I'd actually had quite a lot of contact with genetics up to that point.
Yeah.
And that was very probably within a year I'd started training in genetics after
fantastic.
That.
Fantastic. But it needed somebody to point out. So did you have a particular specialty within pediatrics that you followed, or?
No, so I was quite early in the training. So I did general pediatric training, and you do bits and bobs. There was a number of areas that really excited me. I'm quite an excitable person in general, so I get very interested in different areas. I was really powerfully affected, I would say, by pediatric oncology, so children with cancer. And I remember on quite a lot of the wards at the Royal London, but particularly on the paediatric oncology mm-hmm. wards, being struck by how that I could see myself being helpful in mm-hmm. both the sort of the mixture of clinical care and helping families and children in really difficult situations, mm-hmm. but also thinking about how the science I could tell mm-hmm. would really change things, and actually understanding what genetic underlying conditions yeah. were, their relevance in that setting. Yeah. So that really captured mm-hmm. me. And actually then when I trained in genetics, I ended up being interested in a mixture of both mm-hmm. complex childhood rare conditions mm-hmm. and those that predispose to cancer. And that's where I did my PhD in mm-hmm. childhood cancer conditions okay. as a result.
Yeah.
So that sort of captured me. But though as a geneticist, and I'm an honorary consultant at Great Ormond Street still, mm-hmm. so I do one clinic a month, quite a general interest mm-hmm. in those rare childhood mm-hmm. conditions. But that mixture of really enjoying spending time understanding mm-hmm. what families need mm-hmm. and bringing in the scientific thinking and our world in healthcare, but like particularly genetics and genomics in that kind of setting mm-hmm. has changed and will continue to change things mm-hmm. so enormously. Mm-hmm. And that thinking about how we can change things for the better for individual families. Mm-hmm. And then what's such a privilege in this role is to say, how can we think about how that can mm-hmm. scale to be, you know, something that can be much more widely mm-hmm. available? Really, that's what excites me.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. And can you think of, is there a particular case that has maybe stayed with you from your clinical work that maybe drives the work that you do in your Genomics England role?
I guess one of the families actually who I haven't met clinically, but we met through our work at Genomics England. Mm-hmm. It's a really powerful story. It was a little boy called Owen, who had developmental delay, was also growing more slowly and had some other medical problems, and saw quite a number of different specialists mm-hmm. and loads of different hospitals. And then joined the 100,000 Genomes mm-hmm. project when he was probably about six. Mm-hmm. So, and it really, the family had been really trying mm-hmm. to find answers for years mm-hmm. already. And initially, the 100,000 Genomes project didn't find an answer. Mm-hmm. And as you know, one of the really powerful things that mm-hmm. has happened in this country because of that work, the 100,000 mm-hmm. Genomes project, now the NHS Genomic Medicine Service, is linking the care that you can receive today with research that mm-hmm. can go on and continue looking mm-hmm. for findings. And yeah. for Owen, a couple of years later, mm-hmm. researchers in the National Genomic Research Library mm-hmm. found an answer for his wow. Condition. It turned out that he had a condition caused by pathogenic variants in the thyroid hormone receptor. Very rare condition. Not picked up on newborn screening because of the way it disturbs the biochemistry. This variant was one that wasn't previously known about and so wasn't identified, but was the cause for his condition, helped understand the cause for him. Actually, there were a bunch of other children with exactly the same variant
wow.
who then we could identify elsewhere in the country. And then as it happened for him, and this is far too rare at the moment, but there was an intervention that could meaningfully change things. So
wow.
Thyroid hormone treatment for him. And then really for us here and for me thinking, and for the family saying, like, this has made a real difference for them. Mm-hmm. And could this have happened earlier? And could we have looked really early in life to find this before that long diagnostic odyssey started, maybe even before the family would recognize any kind of problems? And I'm really proud of the difference we've made for the family and families like his, but also it just makes you realize how much better we could think about doing.
Yeah.
And that it's that. And I was lucky enough to talk to the family about their experience and what they feel about it mm-hmm. and their hope for how we can do better in the future. And that it's that sort of thing, being proud of what we can do. And mm-hmm. we're really lucky in this country in terms of the sort of investment that's gone on in genomics, but also recognizing how much potential
what we
there
can
is.
Do, the power of it. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. So we've heard lots about the generation study. Are you much involved with that program of work?
Yes. So we at Genomics England run the generation study. And right from the beginning of thinking about it, like Owen's story is one of the inspirations behind the program.
Yeah.
Both, you know, just thinking about how we conceived it and the sorts of questions. And so I've been really lucky to be involved from right at the beginning when the previous chief medical officer, Sally Davis, wrote to Mark Caulfield, who was then our chief scientist, asking to set up a group of experts to help advise on thinking about the programme. And then through us establishing it, setting up jointly with the NHS and now launching the programme in the last year. And now we're now open at 27 sites across the country, recruited 5,000, nearly 6,000 families to the program. So it's one of the things which I think gives me most hope for the future, that we can run research programs like this. And it's very clearly research, asking specific questions to develop evidence on whether this is something that we should offer. And if it is something we should offer to all newborn babies, how do you do it? How do you develop that? And I think I'm really proud of how so many different stakeholders across the country, across the whole of a National Health Service, can work together to plot a path to understanding what how the future, how we might do better in the future.
Yeah. So are there any other work programmes that Genomics England is involved with, or is it all focused on the generation study?
There's lots that we're doing across a bunch of different areas. So, you know, at the heart of what we do is working with the NHS to support national scale delivery of service for that, that at the moment is focused wholly on whole genome sequencing. So the rare disease and cancer testing there, and linking that to research so that since the 100,000 genomes project, we've moved into sort of live service delivery mode, but we haven't lost that link with research. So people still can consent to their data being made available to researchers in the National Genomic Research Library. More than 90% of people who are asked do. And that means that when once a month I'm sat there in clinic, and many thousands of people every day can offer testing to their the families they're seeing, we know that this isn't just about a test today. It's also about continuing to learn. And so that's like the foundation of what we do. Those two pieces, the NHS service, the National Genomic Research Library, and then we run, if you like, proof of concept programs of all sorts of different scales to ask questions about how might we make this come to life. And now, our vision is a world where everyone can benefit from genomic healthcare, and that everyone comes out in different ways. It's about everyone in terms of all communities and equitable access. It's also our view that genomics, if we get the infrastructure, digital infrastructure and all sorts of other infrastructure, education for the workforce right, and develop the right evidence, genomics could be part of the fabric of healthcare. And so programs like the newborns program ask questions to develop evidence to help us understand how we might get there. And so we're working as well with the NHS and all on work to think about how the genomics digital infrastructure can evolve in the future and what our role at Genomics England is in that. We've been doing work on new sequencing technologies in different areas. So we've, the last few years, we've run a program on long read sequencing in cancer, on bringing in other modalities of data, image data to help research and sort of AI-driven research. Lots of work thinking about the future in terms of AI and digital algorithms, that how we can help test and prove which ones are, make a difference, perform equitably, and are safe to be used in routine care. And critically, that sort of equity piece across everything we do. We've been running the last few years a diverse data program and thinking about how this isn't just a program on its own, but how we make sure that that is embedded across all of the research programs we run, all of the work we do. So there's a lot in there. And I guess one of the, I guess the two big themes as we look to the future are, firstly, we think if we develop the right evidence, even on what we know today about genomics, health genomics could make a difference to so much more of healthcare. We think half of all healthcare encounters could by 2035 be informed by genomics. And a really good example of where that can make a difference is pharmacogenomics, of course, prescribing, avoiding adverse drug reactions. And we think, you know, genomics could, is such a good exemplar of the sorts of shifts mm-hmm. that are talked about by the government and the NHS 10-year plan, being more digital, being more preventative, mm-hmm. And increasingly sort of in the community and putting data mm-hmm. in the hands of mm-hmm. families and participants. Mm-hmm. And then there's a really big innovation mm-hmm. piece that sits, it drives that, but it also it's about testing new tooling and making, like taking advantage of the new sequencing technologies and new algorithms and new genomics enabled therapies mm-hmm. that come along. So that's really critical for us. And sort of binding across it all is engagement and ethics, mm-hmm. and particularly with an eye on that equity piece, because our role is to build digital infrastructure, to run big programs, to develop evidence that can actually change mm-hmm. policy and be implemented. And in the midst of that and across all of it is to engage and like make sure that the evidence we're developing and our understanding is in step with people's expectations, yeah. and there's really strong buy-in to it. And we're at such an exciting time. Mm-hmm. We're really fortunate about the expertise there is in the UK, about our National Health Service and the investment there that there has and sustained long-term investment, that we're really well placed to capture that and make a real difference for people's lives and make the UK a real place to do genomics.
Hi, my name's Naima Kalachand, and I'm the host of Behind the Genes, Genomics England's podcast. Join us for the latest in cutting-edge research and real-life stories from people affected by rare conditions and cancer. Through thoughtful conversations, we'll take you behind the science. Plus, check out our Genomics 101 explainer episodes, where we break down complex genetic terms in under 10 minutes. Subscribe to Behind the Genes on your favourite podcast app today.
It's really fantastic hearing you talk about how the patient really is at the centre. And, you know, even, you know, with our other guests where we spoke about like the generation study and thinking about that kind of that patient voice right in the centre, right from the concept of the programmes, about getting their voice in that. And it's just fantastic to hear that, you know, there are clinicians such as yourself right at the heart of it who, you know, are driven by knowing the benefit that it can bring to patients, also knowing the flip side of that, and very much keeping that patient, yeah. you know, and public voice as part of it. It's reassuring when we're, you know, entering these phases of not really knowing where this genomic technology will end us up. So it's great to hear that from you.
No, and it's so important. It's one of the things when I first joined Genomics England nearly 10 years ago, mm-hmm. initially as a clinician expert giving advice on how to run the rare disease arm of the mm-hmm. 100,000 Genomes Project. And I was really struck right from the outset about how thoughtful mm-hmm. the establishment of mm-hmm. the 100,000 Genomes mm-hmm. Project, people had been about that engagement piece from the beginning, mm-hmm. setting up, I think it happened just about as I arrived, mm-hmm. the participant panel mm-hmm. that is still right at the centre of everything we do. And it's been really important learning for us, say, through the 100,000 Genomes Project. And there was so much we learned, like so many mistakes we made mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. could learn from. And then in the generation study, and as we think about future mm-hmm. studies, making sure, as you say,
yeah.
that there's that involvement from the beginning, because this is all about making a difference mm-hmm. to yep. all of our lives.
Yep.
And the focus has to be on what where people need a difference to be made, what mm-hmm. people value,
yeah.
and also what they're comfortable with.
Yes.
This isn't just like science or
yeah.
economics. It's more complex than that. And
yeah.
there needs to be really broad buy-in as well mm-hmm. for it to be something that can make the difference
yeah.
that we can see it could.
As you know, kind of clinicians within genetics, you know, ethics runs right through the centre of it. And, you know, as a profession, we're always... we always have one eye on the ethics of what we're doing. And so it's fantastic to hear that such kind of forward-facing future planning work that you're doing here at Genomics England has still got that core running through it. Yeah. For me, yeah. it feels reassuring yeah. to hear that all those things are still at the heart of the work that's being done. So thinking about a good day at work for you, what does it look like?
I love my working days. They're so varied. I think it's a little bit actually to the point you just made about the, like, bringing in the different points of view. Mm-hmm. I think my best days are when I spend time with teams made up, and not just within Genomics England, within like the people we work with across the NHS, yeah, industry, academia, is people from different disciplines and different backgrounds and different communities coming together with quite different starting points, mm-hmm, and getting excited about addressing the really big problems, mm-hmm, that there are. And that's what excites me most. And I feel so lucky to work as a result with, mm-hmm, so many brilliant people, mm-hmm, who want to, are passionate about it. And the passion to make a difference comes with pain sometimes, mm-hmm, because, yeah, you have to worry about, yeah, the mistakes you might have made,
yeah,
and you have to invest. So that's, yeah, that's a real privilege, mm-hmm, I find. Mm-hmm. And I guess, yeah, that lots of our work by its nature brings that together. And it's also so important. It's people enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And it's so important to bring all of those views together rather than it being sort of science that happens in a, mm-hmm, a locked room,
yeah,
and is perfectly like clinical and sort, yeah, of whatever. And it might be excellent and very, mm-hmm, significant in a sort of scientific sense, but it has to be significant in terms of the difference it can make in the outside world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in the healthcare context.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I agree. So on the flip side then, what's a more challenging day at work like?
I guess I am very glass half full, and I guess the thing is that I feel so lucky about the ability of the UK to ask these questions, and that the UK can be there striving to think about the future, mm-hmm, when there are like tough conversations,
yeah,
or, you know, heated debates, mm-hmm, about how we best do things. And it's, mm-hmm, right that, mm-hmm, we have those, and, yep, that those views are aired and that they're taken in, that those are some of the harder conversations, mm-hmm, but they're also, I wouldn't have known this 10 years ago before I joined Genomics, mm-hmm, England, but they're hard in the moment sometimes, mm-hmm, but I think they're the things that actually also give me the most satisfaction that you can have, because you need to be open to have them, you need to create the space for them, mm-hmm, and it's your ability collectively to navigate them and find a practical, mm-hmm, route through. So they are hard, and they're definitely days I worry about in advance,
mm-hmm,
but they're not days they're almost like the days I relish when you look backwards. You're, yeah, like, this is why we're here, is, yeah, to have those, mm-hmm. I think at the heart of it, I really powerfully think this is in my work, I think it's so easy as someone, maybe, for example, if you're a clinician sat the other side of a consulting, mm-hmm, desk, mm-hmm, to be just celebrate what's good about what we're doing today, because, mm-hmm, the clinic door shuts, mm-hmm, a family maybe goes home,
yeah,
you don't see all of the, mm-hmm, suffering and the, mm-hmm, hardship that's still there that you haven't helped. Mm-hmm. It's very easy to accept the status quo. It's also more comfortable. You don't have to have difficult conversations, mm-hmm, often. It's often easier. And I think there's a real duty, mm-hmm, to really push to think about how we could do things better, mm-hmm, and differently, mm-hmm, and that balancing that ambition and the realism and the fact that you need to admit that this isn't easy,
yeah,
is at the heart of all of this. And it's, you know, we're really lucky to be able to engage in those sorts of discussions, but they're the really important ones, mm-hmm, to have. And that combination of like really ambitiously saying this is why we need to, mm-hmm, we can't just sit still, mm-hmm, because of the very real challenges, mm-hmm, facing people that we're not addressing, the very real difference we could make, mm-hmm, if we work through some of these really knotty problems. Let's not pretend they're not knotty, they're knotty,
yeah, yeah.
and let's talk about that and work out what a practical and sensible path through is,
mm-hmm, yeah. Fantastic. So in terms of the future then, what are you most excited about?
I think I'm most excited about the difference that we might make if you cast forward sort of 5 to 10 years, mm-hmm, you know, far enough forward that, you know, the world could be substantially different, but also not so far away that it's hard to predict where we are. Yeah. So I'm most excited about the evidence that will develop through the generation study and seeing how that pans out and whether that's something that it is adopted and is offered to every one of the 600 mm-hmm. plus thousand babies born a year in the UK. Mm-hmm. About that number I said earlier, like how we develop the evidence mm-hmm. and build the digital infrastructure that mm-hmm. could mean that genomics could be part of the fabric mm-hmm. of healthcare and playing a role in more than half of healthcare in hands. How can we develop the evidence
yeah.
that means that might happen? And the evidence in the round through the engagement, understanding what people's views are through the ethics as well mm-hmm. as the hard science and the economics, and how that can mm-hmm. be a core part of changing healthcare and the NHS mm-hmm. for the better in the future in all of the ways that we all, I think everyone signs up to and agrees about, you know, it being more preventative, mm-hmm. being, you know, more digital, more modern, mm-hmm. Delivered in a new way, more in the community. And then also the bonus is, you know, this is an area where the UK is recognised as a leader and really also mm-hmm. like being part of the UK success story and like, you know, driving growth and yeah. so forth.
Yeah.
It's really, I think we've been the last 10 or 15 years in a really exciting era. Sometimes yeah. those eras like fade and you think that was an exciting, but we're just like, we're still at the start of another yeah. of those waves of possibility.
Yeah.
And if we get things right,
yeah.
There's so much that we can do.
Fantastic. And where do you see your ambition taking you next?
I think it's to that future and working yeah. out, you know, there is so much to do and work through and so many sort of knotty questions yes. to work through. It's being at the heart of that and learning our lessons mm-hmm. from what we've done before. I think about it a bit like a blueprint for mm-hmm. testing mm-hmm. New ways of using genomics or new innovations. And it's making sure that we learn the lessons as we go, because every time you do something, you realize you could have done it better and differently. And, you know, making sure that participants and the public are in there right mm-hmm. from the beginning, making sure that you hear all of the different views early mm-hmm. as you design mm-hmm. programs or solutions. So, yeah, I'm sure you can tell. I'm passionate about what we can do in the future, learning from what we've done already. And with the NHS, with so many thousands of people in all sorts of different organisations across the country and our participants in our programmes, we've learned a lot about how we can do this. And I think the track record makes me confident that we can do it well in the future, while making lots of mistakes that we'll yeah. continue to learn from.
Yeah. I think I love your honesty and your openness of, you know, as you say, being open to making those mistakes, of doing the best that you can, but knowing that you'll never get it right all of the time from the get-go, but that your honesty and upfrontness about that, but your willingness to learn from that and to try anyway and do the best job you can, yeah. but to learn and move forward, I think is absolutely yeah. commendable.
I think it's really important, and it's I think sometimes important to be honest with people when they're joining mm-hmm. programs, whatever their role, mm-hmm. participant, mm-hmm. You know, running a program, running a site for a program. Some of these things take some bravery, mm-hmm. and we need to support people through that to be open to all of that fragility that is there for them, but knowing that that's the right course. Mm-hmm. that will yeah. get the best outcome.
Yeah. Well, it's been absolutely fantastic to talk to you. Thanks so much for joining us on the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me.
If you would like more information about the topics that we have discussed today, then you can find these on ney-genomics.org.uk/podcast. You'll also find here all the episodes in our podcast series. All episodes can also be accessed via Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and all other major podcast platforms. Thanks for listening.